cricket, lovely cricket. Yes, indeed, cricket, lovely cricket, all the way through till 7 o'clock tonight. I miss a cricket, lovely. It is, of course, 98 Not Out, with me, Darren Mutu, back in its regular slot on a Thursday at 6 o'clock right here on Phoenix FM. Really busy show tonight, got a couple of excellent guests. Bit of news and updates, bit of music. Me and my girlfriend are dying. A lot to squeeze in. Guest tonight on the show, David Griffin, who anyone that follows cricket on Twitter will be well aware of. Officially, he's the photographer for Derby County Cricket Club, but he's followed the club for more than 50 years, and he runs an excellent Twitter account. You must follow it, at DGriffinPics. It's a mixture of history, updates, and some really funny stories as well. Well worth a follow, so we'll be talking to him. And we've also got a treat for Essex fans. Essex's bowler of the year, Jamie Porter, joins us. And he'll be telling us about how 2023 was for him and for his county. We'll get some news from the Cricket World Cup. I'll try and squeeze in birthdays of the week as well. And a bit of news and chat along the way. You know the form. We've got to say hi to Dan Hagger. He's a huge Essex fan and a regular listener. Evening, Dan. Hope you are well. Also to Mr. Richard Clark. You all know him as the Grumbler. He's locked in as well. And if you are locked in, let me know. Email radio at phoenixfm.com, title your mail 98 Not Out, it will get through to me. And of course, use all of the messaging functions on social media. 98 Not Out is across Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. And if you know me personally, you can text me or WhatsApp, whatever. Always great to hear from you, and I know lots of you cricket fans tune into this show. And if you can't listen live, remember, go to the phoenixfm.com website. Later on, from about 8 o'clock onwards, this whole show will be available to download and listen back as well. And while I'm at it, 98 Not Out is on YouTube and available as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. In a different style. Man called Jah Thomas in a rubber dub style. Man called Jah Thomas in a different style. Man called Jah Thomas at the change up in style. And I keep getting asked this. This theme tune is, of course, called Cricket, Lovely Cricket, and it's by Jah Thomas. And if you like that kind of music, reggae music, don't forget my other show on Phoenix FM, Reggae Revival, every Wednesday night between 10 and midnight. But we'll concentrate on cricket between now and 7 o'clock. And let's catch up on some news from the World Cup. And at this point, I'll say good evening to Andrew Maxwell from Sydney, Australia, because he would have been watching Australia taking on South Africa in a great game today, which saw an unusually tepid, I think is the right way to describe Australia today, against South Africa. South Africa ended up winning by 134 runs. The Aussies dropped 5 catches. It was a really strange performance. Didn't seem like them at all. But well done to South Africa. Great performance. And turning in a win like that was really good. Now, staying with the World Cup, England bounced back from that defeat last week to New Zealand. They beat Bangladesh quite convincingly. Some standout performances, a ton for David Malan. And notably, 4 wickets for our very own Rhys Topley. Always seems to do well when he's pulling on an England shirt, and it's really great to see him recovering from all of the injuries that have absolutely dogged his career. And the other highlight this week from the matches we've seen so far, Pakistan set a world record in chasing down Sri Lanka's 345.
Across Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM.
Right. On with the guests, and as I said, we've got a busy show tonight. I've got to squeeze a lot in to 1 hour. So, first up, all you Essex fans, Jamie Porter spoke to me, and a lot to say about cricket, and also, interestingly, snooker. Let's take a listen.
Talk
Jamie, brilliant to see you. You must be unwinding after a long, hard season with Essex cricket.
Yeah, we've had kind of a busy first week off with all the kind of end of season dues and whatever wrapping up. But yeah, I feel like the relaxation starts today.
Yeah, very well. Well, I've got to congratulate you on getting an award, Best Bowler of the Year. I can remember you as a very fresh-faced youngster at an awards night where I was sat front and centre. And I think, what was the first award you got? Was it Second 11 or was it Young Player of the Year? What was the first one you got?
I think it was Second 11 Player of the Year, yeah.
Yeah.
That would have, 2014, I think that was, yeah.
Yeah, that was on a night where there was a competition amongst all the boys to see who could be the most drunk on the night, from what I remember. I think it was when Napes got up and actually couldn't speak.
Graham Napier won that one, yeah.
Yeah, but congratulations anyway. But a brilliant season, 57 wickets. You say you're back to your best?
Yeah, I think this is the best I've bowled, you know, like across the season, my whole career. I feel like at this stage now, I've become the most complete package I can see myself becoming, in terms of, I feel like I've become a lot more versatile. You know, I've had to do it playing on wickets that are a lot less helpful than maybe I have done in the past, where I've potentially have, you know, better statistical seasons. But I feel like, it's certainly the most proud I've been of my personal performance.
Yeah, I think there's a few fans on social media grumbling like they always do. But I think if you'd have said to everyone at Essex 12 months ago, for 2023, you'll get runners-up in the Champo, and you'll be at finals day and lose out in the final narrowly, you would have snapped the hand off. So I don't see what people are complaining about.
Yeah, well, the way I see it is, you want to compete every season. And the reality is, if you're a side that competes, someone's going to lose. You know, and we've been very fortunate that's actually the first time we've, you know, the T20, last time we're at the finals day, we won it, the championship. It's the first time we'll come second in my career. So, you know, I think, they say you've got to lose one to win one. I think, you know, we've been very fortunate. This group of players never had to lose one. But, you know, like, it might be a good thing. It gives us some new tools to take forward.
People forget. So I'm old enough, way older than you. So when I first started going to Essex, it was in the 70s when Keith Fletcher was captain. And Essex had that fantastic run in the 70s and early 80s. And then there was the fallow period, which people seem to have forgotten about. And then the last 6-7 years, back on the game, winning things, you know, Champo twice, T20 in 2019, and, you know, being front and centre of everything that's going on in the county championship or the county scene. I think at the stage Essex are currently at, I think it's just a case of really, you know, they are good enough and they are, as you say, competing. And, you know, I look forward to next year of more of the same.
Yeah, I think, you know, you look at the modern day game as well, like, it's the test match. Everything's stacked up in the favour of the test match grounds. So for us to have built, like, for the club to have built a squad that can go and compete with those, and, you know, you say compete with those, really, there's Surrey and Hampshire in the championship that we're competing with. So we're far exceeding the other ones, or have done in recent years. So I think, you know, that's a real credit to us. And, you know, you hope it continues. You know, the future of cricket does look relatively bleak for the non-test match grounds. But, you know, I like to think that we can be the exception.
Well, when you look at who won everything this year, I mean, if Essex had won the Champo, Somerset won the Blast, and then very unfashionable Leicestershire won the One Day Cup. So, you know, where were these big counties and all of these things? You know, it was nearly, very, very nearly a clean sweep. I still think Essex were desperately unlucky in the end. It was just weather and bad luck that probably stopped them winning the championship.
Well, I think if it wasn't for the weather, we'd have gone into Northampton being top of the league. Because you'd like to think we'd have beat Surrey at home if we hadn't lost the day's play. So that would have been a big swing. I think we'd have beat Hampshire. I think, you know, we really rolled the dice. And I think it was a right move to roll the dice. I think more times than not, we win that. But, you know, like, we wouldn't have been forced to do that if it hadn't rained for, you know, three. We hadn't lost three quarters of a day's play. We'd have, you know, we'd have batted for another 100, potentially even 150 runs and had a whole day to bowl at them. So, you know, that's, yeah, but that's the way it goes. You know, we've had a lot, we've been on the right side of a lot of it in the past. So, you know, inevitably sometimes you are going to be on the wrong side of it.
Yeah. I suppose you're sort of falling into the bracket of being one of the senior players in the squad. You've been around actually longer than I thought when I sort of actually did check. Fast bowling is hard on the body. Have you made adjustments in your technique since sort of your early days of coming on the scene with Chingford? And you were at Five Saronians originally, weren't you?
Yeah, back then. Yeah. It's more my approach has changed a lot. It's trying to box a bit smarter now. So spending that little bit more time on the areas that need it, not trying to, you know, lift the world every gym session, just trying to listen to my body, you know, trying to, you know, build that base and peak at the right time, kind of in the off season with my gym stuff, rather than, you know, in the past of like hit personal best numbers at Christmas and what good's that, you know, by March, like I'm a wreck because I've just gone too hard. So, you know, so I've learned a little bit, and, you know, even just preparation for games, knowing when I need to bowl, you know, when I don't need to bowl, and being a bit smart with that.
It is a very fit squad. I think fitness for a long time now has been very high on the Essex approach to the game. And it starts quite early. Is it November that you're back in pre-season?
Yeah, so November we'll be back in and we'll literally just be running and gymming. Pretty much it, yeah. There'll be a bit of maintenance on the body. We'll get a bit of TLC in between that. And, you know, yoga and mobility sessions and whatever. But that'll be, yeah, pretty much. So that'll be what it is. I can't wait for that. But
no, tell me the difference. You were involved with England for a couple of years. Just explain to me what it's like to, you know, you have your step up from club cricket to county cricket. What's the step up like going from county to national level?
Obviously, I don't know the step up in playing. You know, I've got half an idea, having played Lions a lot, you know, in England and overseas. And, you know, I'd say, like, you know, touring India and playing against the sides that they put out, that is as close to international cricket as you'll ever get without having it. But yeah, for me, it's just the environment. It's, you go from an environment where it's a lot more self-driven to an environment where you literally have everything you need. So, I mean, I'm sure they'd even wipe your backside if you needed it. Like, it's, you know, the amount of bodies, it is all, there is someone for everything, and everything is so that you can perform. So, you know, that's, it's a pretty cool environment to be a part of. And, you know, it's just, yeah, I'd say it's just the environment is another level.
Hmm. And boring question, you're sort of growing up, who were your cricketing heroes, and you know, currently who are those that you rate highest in the game?
So Flintoff was number one growing up. I saw him 2005, and then obviously Jimmy and Brody, those two, watching them kind of, as you know, before I came into the game and as I was coming into the game, and then, you know, sharing a dressing room with them and playing against them has been probably one of the highlights.
Mind-blowing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's brilliant. Like, you know, being able to talk bowling with them and just watch them train bowl alongside them in the nets was pretty cool. And then playing against them, and, you know, I'll never forget first time I played against Jimmy, he knocked my off pole out, and I was trying not to smile as I walked off. If you're going to get bowled by anyone, might as well be your hero.
Yeah, so, too right.
Yeah. I mean, I was 21 when that happened, so it was, yeah, a pretty cool moment. Weirdly enough, I don't think I've ever actually got him out in return, so I
might have to. Still time.
Yeah, exactly. I bowled him a couple of times, so.
A word also about one of the unique points of Chelmsford is the fans. Now, every time I've been down there, whether it's particularly with championship games, I mean, obviously, T20 Blast, we know all about that. It sells out and, you know, it's a big Friday night out down the club. But there have been some decent crowds, more than decent, turning up for championship games. Have you got a few words to say about the fans and the support?
Absolutely, yeah. Like, I think it's the people that make the ground. Like, the grounds, if we're being honest, it's not very nice. But there's something about it that I love. No, I love playing at home in a championship game. Love it. And I think it is the people because, you know, I'm seeing the same faces every week. And a lot of these, there are a lot of people that travel away as well. And, you know, they become a part of your kind of journey as an Essex player as well. Like even you, you know, I met you as a kind of like a supporter as well, weren't you? I know you're a bit more involved with that, but you know, what was that, 10 years ago? So, you know, I've made a lot of friends just through being a player at the club, you know, just from being involved at the club. So they mean a lot. And I know it's like anything, you get some that aren't as nice. You know, I've had the unkind side of it as well on social media, but I've noticed they're the ones that say that like to have a go on social media, I've funnily enough never seen at the ground.
No.
So, you know, they like to give it all the talk, but they're never actually paying the ticket price to come and watch. So
yeah.
But no, we're very lucky. We've got a great fan base and they're, you know, great people that come and watch us.
And what I've noticed as well is that you and the guys are very, very good at interacting with the fans and, you know, whether it's shaking hands or posing for a selfie or just having a chat. And I think that really goes a long way to making people, you know, the whole thing feel like one great big family.
Well, I think that's kind of what it is, isn't it? Like, no, it's a long summer, they're long days, but, you know, like, yeah, I walk past the same people every day at a home game by the stairs and it just gets to the point where it'd be rude not to stop and have a chat, you know, like these people are there, they support you, they never say anything negative, you know, even when I bowled an absolute pile of garbage, you know, they clapping me up the stairs. I'm like, what are you clapping for? I was rubbish. But, you know, like it's so, you know, they're just good people. And it's nice to be involved, you know, with people like that.
Yeah, no, it is good. And there are a lot of fans that have been going there for a long time, you know, and I think it is really good. It's really important to develop that whole feeling, both on and off the field, of being part of the club and what Essex means to so many people as well.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's a direction I can see the club going in as well. I think the club as a whole really do value the people that come through the door every week. And you know, things like the end of season awards night, you do see it. Like, it's a chance to integrate with people that, you know, you don't necessarily get to sit down and have a drink with and kind of, you know, be a bit more of a normal person rather than that guy in Essex kit. So yeah, it's good fun.
And please tell me that the bus celebrations are still going on. I know they used to be posted on social media a few years back, but yeah, tell me they still carry on.
Yeah, they've calmed down a little bit.
Oh, really?
We had a good one from Blackpool to Edgbaston because we won pretty much the last ball of the day at Blackpool and then drove to Edgbaston for finals day. So that was that was very good evening. It was about 3.5-4 hour drive, so that was good fun.
Brilliant. Now, you're a big West Ham fan, and back in Europe, you're not missing Declan Rice, but I noticed they've set a record. Did you see that record? They are now the first English team to go 17 games unbeaten in Europe.
Yeah, people keep saying to me about kind of, you know, us being in Europe but finishing well. You got our record in Europa.
Yeah.
Since with that, like, if you take out qualifying, because whenever we've had to qualify for the main tournament, we've been horrendous and not got in. But our record in Europa and obviously Europa Conference has been unbelievable. Like, we finished semi-finalists in a good game against Greeting German team, Frankfurt.
All right,
and then winning the following year in the Conference League. And then this year, we just look so at ease. So, yeah, it's been a great journey.
You're going to retain it, aren't you?
Nice. Yeah.
Now, Phoenix FM is based in the Brentwood Centre, and I mentioned on the show last week that it was very busy with fans arriving for the snooker. The English Open has been going on at the Brentwood Centre, and you were spotted down there enjoying some snooker.
Yeah, I was there yesterday. It was a good day. It was my first time there, actually, so it's just bizarre.
Judd Trump?
Literally, yeah, Judd Trump, Matt Selt. So, yeah, I went to watch that. Actually, I was actually supporting Matt Selt, but unfortunately, the result.
He lives near you, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think so. I've seen him quite a lot. Like when I walk the dog and that, and then you know, he's like, "Yeah, you recognise him?" Like, oh, the reason to support someone then. So, yeah, you know, it's always like I think it's nice if you're going to get into it. Like, it's nice to have someone in particular that you know, I enjoy watching him play, and obviously knowing that he's local, it's just a reason to follow him and you know, try and give some support.
Snooker was a big thing when I was growing up, and it was sort of massive with Jimmy Wyatt and Steve Davis and Alex Higgins and all of that. It seems to be getting popular again, though. I think, you know, the numbers that turn up for these tournaments, and I think it's a great, the format of these is really good. You've got four tables there, best of seven. It's very quick fire and exciting to watch.
Yeah, I think it's one of those, like I think if you play the game and then you go and watch these guys, when they get half a chance what they can do, it's just unbelievable. Like, it's so hard to be able, like, I can tell you how hard it is to do. Like, watch Trump knocking out, I think it was a 1-3-5 break yesterday, and they just mopped up the balls when given half a chance. And it's something that I could only dream of being able to do that. You know, I'd be happy with, you know, just a half century break. You know, and then, yeah, so I just think I've got so much appreciation for what they can do.
Yeah, it's the cue ball control that always gets me, that, you know, they'll pot a ball and then the cue ball will travel around the table and end up, like, exactly where it needs to be. Just, I don't know.
Well, I think that's the main skill. Like, obviously, the ability to pot, was it 36 balls? Is what you know what they do on quite a few occasions, but the ability to put that cue ball in position to be able to do that every time is just unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you play a bit yourself?
Yeah, I do. I play kind of as much as I can. You know, was golf, still is a little bit golf, but kind of since Ellie's been born, it's been, you know, golf's, you know, it's a 5-hour day, so it's not as easy to squeeze in. So snooker's kind of taken over. And it's also like, if I'm going to play, I can actually go and practice for an hour as well. And so, you know, I'm playing quite a lot at the moment. And my cue's come on a few away trips as well, and play in the evening. And it's just, you know, it's nice. It's relaxing. And yeah, I've always enjoyed playing.
I'll have to give you a game one night.
Yeah, I'm always keen.
I used to play loads when I was younger, and I've not played for a long time. But yeah, I'm definitely up for taking you on. And yeah, we'll have to have a forfeit for whoever wins or loses.
Yeah.
All right, Jamie, I'll let you crack on. Lovely to have you on, and great to talk to you. Rest up well, and looking forward to you and knocking them all over in 2024.
Cheers, mate. Appreciate it.
Listen to 98 Not Out with me, Darren Mutu, right here on Phoenix FM. My thanks to Jamie Porter. Really excellent chat there, very relaxed. And yeah, good to talk about his season and his relationship with the fans. Very interesting. I think that's a big factor of Essex cricket, that the players do celebrate and spend time with the fans. And it's a great relationship. Yes, I'm going to play him at snooker. I'll let you know how that goes on. Now, sticking with Essex, there's a bit of news out today. First of all, Charlie Allison has signed a rookie contract for 2024. He really impressed this season, and I think that's a name that everyone should be just making careful note of, because I think he's definitely a star for the future. And sticking with Essex, there's a there's a members' supper coming up on the 2nd of November. it's not widely publicised, but people should be getting involved with this, and a chance to hang out with the great and the good of the management, but in particular CEO John Stevenson will be there. It's on November the 2nd. Tickets are £35 each for a really sumptuous dinner. If you are interested, contact Kimberly Roig at the club. Her email is kimberly.roig. That's O... I'll start again. Kimberly.roig, R-O-I-G, at essexcricket.co.uk. It'll be a great night. I'll be there, and I've heard that the Grumbler will be there. So if you want to mingle with some of the glitterati of Essex Cricket, they will be there on the night.
Go to phoenixfm.com and listen to online guest interviews. Check the events for your area and listen to great radio online.
Right, next up, I've got a really great guest. This interview is absolutely fantastic, with David Griffin, officially the photographer for Derbyshire County Cricket Club, but he's a former board member. He's been a follower of the club for over 50 years and is just fascinating. Sit back and enjoy Mr. David Griffin. Bizarrely, on a Sunday morning in October, the 8th of October, the weather outside is absolutely perfect for playing cricket. And joining me today from an equally sunny-looking Derbyshire is Derbyshire's official club photographer, I think to give him one of his many titles, is David Griffin. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And it's a little overcast at the moment, but the forecast is excellent. So I'm looking forward to spending at least some of the afternoon with my feet up in the garden, listening to some of the World Cup on the radio.
But it's funny, isn't it? We could have done with this weather a few weeks ago when the county championship was heading to its climax, when rain seemed to get in the way of one or two of the more important games.
Yeah, we had quite a bit of rain down at Bristol. We had some at Derby. We lost a couple of days' play. I guess it's one of the vagaries of the English summer. I know there was a lot of hand-wringing about the fact that, you know, we'll be playing in September, what do you expect? But I think a glance through my photographs for the last 20 years will show that most September's actually kind of okay. You know, and I've seen some horrendous washouts at the height of summer. So I think it's the English summer, sadly, I'm afraid. We can't do much about it. As we often say in the press box, you can't play the weather. So just play the game when you can, really.
You're absolutely right. I mean, the Ashes was affected hugely by downpours at Headingley and Old Trafford, wasn't it? So, and that was in July. So, yeah, exactly. So for those that don't really know, Griff, as I like to call him, is well known on Twitter amongst cricket followers for a really excellent account, which I suggest everyone follows just for the pure entertainment value. On the face of it, it's an account of what's going on at Derbyshire Cricket. But intermingled with that are some absolutely fantastic anecdotes about long toes and how I met my wife, which I'll get into talk about in a minute. But also, what really impressed me and what really perked my interest was you do speak a lot of sense, David. And I think cricket seems to be, certainly this year, incredibly divisive. And there are a lot of keyboard warriors and people that should know better spouting all kinds of nonsense about the county game. You've been a real beacon of common sense for me, at any rate, particularly when there was talk about Yorkshire being bought out by one of the IPL franchises, which on the face of it got a lot of people's feathers up. But you nailed it by saying this just can't happen. It's not as easy as that, and pointed to small details like club structure and all the rest of it. You know, how did you spot that when no one else did?
Well, I was on the committee at Derbyshire from 1999 to 2014. And I got there by accident because I launched a campaign in the winter of 1998, based really upon frustration amongst members at the way that the Derbyshire committee at the time behaved and reacted towards members. And it led to the complete overthrow of the old committee, and I was then elected onto the new one. And I'd always had a fascination with how the club was run and how it was managed. So I got involved in actually writing the club rules. And then as the various changes took place over the years, and particularly with ECB governments, which came in the last two or three years where clubs have moved from committees to boards, I had a real interest in that. And I had a real interest because, for example, slightly digressing, there was a framework which county clubs were asked to follow, which the ECB published for the counties, but only for the county committees of the day. So when I contacted my own county and said, can I see the framework? They said, no, the ECB don't want you to see it. So I contacted the ECB and said, can I see the framework? They said, no, ask your county. So we're being asked as clubs to change our constitutions in line with an ECB framework that no one outside of the existing committees could see. So it was just, you're just left thinking, a phrase that was uttered to me many, many years ago when we were talking about conspiracies. And this gentleman said to me, whenever you're looking for conspiracy, never, ever, ever rule out incompetence. So I've never thought that this was about a conspiracy, but I did think that at times people just didn't really know what they were doing. And so I had a fascination with how do you get rid of a cricket club? How does it go? What do you do to get rid of it? Or what do you do to get to change its constitution? And fundamentally, it's just not as easy as it sounds. And that's good because there's a protection in there to look after a cricket club. Now, at the same time, there are those who would decry that and say, so you've got a few old farts are able to protect the constitution of a cricket club or even the existence of a cricket club. But I would argue that that's safer than letting it go into private hands, because we see what happens with football. There's very, very few people who follow football who are absolutely delighted with the owner of the day because they can't do anything about who he or she is.
Yeah.
They can't get rid of them. They can't do a thing. Whereas cricket, for all its elitist overtones and for the suggestion that it's very much a game based upon class, etc., actually, 15 of the 18 clubs are still owned theoretically by the community. If the community choose not to buy a membership and get involved in that ownership, that's up to them. But Derbyshire is still effectively owned by people from the county and outside who have genuine interest in that county. I think that's brilliant, and it's to be protected.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you use a good. You mentioned football. Southend United are just down the road from me here in Essex, and they've undergone terrible times recently with poor ownership and poor management. Just this week, they finally sorted out the club's been sold and is giving new hope to all the supporters. But yeah, cricket is good. Do you think there's a case, though, for the constitution to be regularly reviewed or amended?
I think, yes. I think one of the problems with cricket is that there's this desire to have more business people connected with the game. And that's certainly true if you look at the rules of most county clubs. My own county, for example, you know, it makes it clear that if you want to be on the board, you've got to fulfil a certain number of different criteria, which I think is good in certain aspects. It's quite right that if you've got a place reserved for cricket on your board, that person should have played first-class cricket and ideally have played it to a good standard, because you want someone who understands that. All I would say is that when I joined the Derbyshire Committee in 1999, the then ECB, which was a fledgling organisation, it's only been running for a couple of years post TCCB, and they issued a document which showed that county cricket had no debt. Collectively, there was no debt. Fast forward 23-24 years to a time where county cricket is run by, in inverted commas, businessmen, and it is largely men, and they are largely from business. We have debt of 300 million. So for all the great business people that have come into the game, in many ways, was it run better when it had ordinary cricket lovers who just loved the game of cricket and didn't want to see harm come to it? It's a question for debate, but I'm not sure always that the sport that gets richer is necessarily good for the game, because cricket's got richer beyond its wildest dreams in the last 20 years, but every county has got further into debt, as with football.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I'm old enough to remember wandering down to Chelmsford and watching Gooch and Lever and Fletcher and the like. No sponsors' logos emblazoned anywhere. Very little round-the-ground advertising from what I can remember as well. Even when you look at England from that time, it's a very, very different scene. And the car park being full of Toyotas with so-and-so sponsors, Graham, written right down the side of the car.
Toyotas, wow, in Derbyshire, Red Sharma had a Skoda. a sponsored Skoda, which in the 1980s, I mean, today they are reputable vehicles, but in the 1980s, they were usually compared with skips, weren't they?
That's right. Yeah, yeah. Youngsters listening to this won't see what a problem with Skoda is, but yeah. No. Yeah, as you say, if you've got a memory that stretches back to the 80s and even the 70s, Skoda were a totally different kettle of fish. Yeah. So your account is fantastic.
Thank you.
It's a huge... it's very, very entertaining. You're very, very good. And I suppose the crux of it is it's a real love letter to Derbyshire County Cricket Club. And it's a mixture of you covering matches and sort of giving live reports, but also it's intermingled with... pictures and comments of days gone by, and just looking through it ahead of this chat, I'd forgotten just how many fantastic players have graced the county ground now. Obviously, the late great Mike Hendrick was one of the fantastic players when I was growing up, both at county level and at England level. But yeah, I'd forgotten that Mikey Holding pulled on the shirt as well.
Yeah, he played more games for Derbyshire than anyone else, including the West Indies. He came in 1983. He stayed until 89, so only John Wright of overseas players played for longer at Derbyshire. And he was part of that revolution at Derbyshire, which Kim Barnett, who was the captain, and Phil Russell, who was the coach. When Kim became captain at 22 in 1983, he said, right, if we're going to compete, if we're going to take Derbyshire from being a ragtag outfit that are seen as also rams and a rubbing rag, if you like, by other counties, we have to do something positive. And the best thing we can do is sign the best available fast bowler. And one of the joys of watching Michael Holding play, apart from the fact that he was such a good cricketer, a world-class cricketer, was watching him bat because, of course, he very rarely, if ever, wore a helmet. Yeah. And we took great delight in travelling around the country and watching Michael and seeing opposition supporters when he wandered out to bat. And you'd hear the comments, oh, he's not got a helmet on. Why is he wearing a helmet? And, of course, no one bounced Michael Holding. And it's hard now to because everyone is covered up, you know, and not you're not allowed to not wear a helmet. But back then it was fabulous to watch these bowlers run in and thinking, yeah, but, you know, if you've got any sense, you will not bowl a short delivery. And occasionally you'd get a young... I mean, the overseas certainly never bounced each other, but occasionally you'd get... or the overseas bowlers didn't. But you'd occasionally get a young English bowler who was perhaps a little green round the gills, but put one in short at Michael, and you think, I don't envy your opportunity later on when it comes to that. But he was wonderful. I still retain a friendship with Michael, which is largely via email and occasionally via a WhatsApp and what have you, because he was such a character and he was so important to Derbyshire at that time. People forget the emergence of Devon Malcolm, who was a young cricketer who was, you know, he had the wrong prescription in his glasses, so he couldn't run in straight. He ran in almost slalom to the wicket and yet became a devastating fast bowler, a wonderful cricketer. And Michael Holding was very much instrumental in cajoling him and encouraging him, and most importantly, about telling him to continue bowling fast. Because, of course, there was a typical English approach, which happened to me. I was never good enough, but it was slow down, get your length in line, get your length in line. Whereas Michael's approach to Devon was, you've been born with searing pace, use it. And of course, Michael was also instrumental in bringing Ian Bishop to Derbyshire. So it was fun times in the 80s and 90s, having people like that around who were bowling quick, alongside people like Dominic Cork, of course, Phil De Freitas, you know, some really, we had a proper pace attack back then. It was fun to watch, that's for certain.
That's what I mean. You know, I sort of look back and, you know, I'd forgotten just this whole catalogue of cricketing greats that have appeared for Derbyshire. It's absolutely amazing. You mentioned Ian Bishop. I mean, yeah, Holding as well, two of the great voices of the commentary box in recent years as well. Bishop is just fantastic.
Yes.
So intermingled with all that, and I noticed today you put on it was an anniversary of something that happened in Glossop in the dim and distant past.
Joseph Bowden.
That's right.
Joseph Bowden. Well, you've got to give them, I mean, basically, every cricketer, we've had 748 of them, so I try to get every one of them's birthday out there, although there are four cricketers we don't have a birth date for. So I think I mentioned them. I think it's usually Halloween because we haven't got a cricketer born on the 31st of October. So I think those four get a mention. But yeah, I try to do basically what I do every day. I do on this day. And fortunately, there's usually something happening on this day every day.
Yeah.
Which is useful.
Well, one of the features of the radio show is cricketing birthdays of the week. It's always quite interesting to see the names that crop up, but also the ages of some of them. There are a lot of people that are older than you think they probably are in your mind. Yeah. There are also people that are a lot younger as well. It's always a rich vein of information to do things like that. I've got one friend. I've never been to watch cricket in Derbyshire, but I've got a friend that's from Bakewell, and when he got married, I was living in France at the time, and I flew up to Manchester, and he picked me up from Manchester Airport and drove me back across Snake Pass. And I was reminded of that reading your piece today about Glossop, and we went through Glossop, and he said to me, "Oh, Glossop, the world's most miserable place. It's awful," and sped up, and we headed up through Derwent Water and back to Bakewell. I've never forgot. I must go to Glossop to see what it's all about. Surely it can't be that bad, can it?
Well, of course, Derbyshire played at Glossop way back in the dim and distant. The Hillwood family, if you're into football, which I think you are, were hugely associated eventually with Arsenal.
All right.
But they originally owned a mill in Glossop. And at the time, Hillwood, who was associated with Derbyshire through playing and secretarial work at Derbyshire, said, "Bring a game to Glossop, a county game to Glossop, and I will guarantee the gate." In other words, I'll put a £100 on the gate, so even if nobody turns up, you'll get paid, sort of thing. So the connection with Glossop goes back to the late 19th century when Derbyshire took games to Glossop. But also, of course, a very, very famous, well, I say it's famous. Quite how many people know about it, I don't know. Although Neville Scott did a really good piece in the most recent edition of The Cricketer about Charles Olivier. And Charles Olivier was the first black cricketer to play county cricket. He toured with the non-first-class West Indies touring team in the late 1890s, and Derbyshire offered him a contract. And he came to England, but of course had to qualify, as was the procedure back then. Even if you were born in Nottinghamshire, if you wanted to play for Derbyshire, you had to move into Derbyshire and then qualify. So Olivier was given a job, this young West Indian from Trinidad, given this job working as a clerk in Glossop and at the same time playing cricket for the Glossop Cricket Club. And from a social perspective, it must have been remarkable having a young West Indian up there, because it's highly unlikely that anyone in Glossop had really said. I know it was relatively close to Manchester, but a long way from Liverpool, for example, from a port. So it's highly unlikely in 1900 that the people of Glossop had seen a black person, never mind a black cricketer. And it would be fascinating to know what the challenges were for him up there. But he qualified, played for Derbyshire, played in what is described by John Shawcraft as the greatest ever county cricket match ever played at Chesterfield in 1904 against Essex, when Essex made 597 in the first innings, with Perrin making 343, and they lost, which is quite remarkable, because Olivier scored 229 and 92 not out. It was a remarkable performance. And just this time last year, actually, last October, I went up to Glossop because a lot of work had been done about Olivier, and they unveiled a heritage blue plaque to him at the pavilion in Glossop. And we didn't realise he'd ever had any children, but there's been some really good work done, not by me, but by others, who'd located a grandson who came up, who lives in London, and he came up to the ceremony and actually unveiled the blue plaque. It was a wonderful, wonderful occasion. So if you go to Glossop, at the very least, go to the cricket ground. It's the Cricket and Bowls Club, I think. I think it's in conjunction with bowls, but the lovely cricket ground, big pavilion, and there on the wall is the blue plaque to Charles Olivier.
You know what? I'm going to do that. That alone is a reason to go and visit and banish my memories of my mate's comments, disparaging comments about this.
Well, and also, I went up to Scarborough for the 4-day game against Yorkshire last month. I went to Filingdales, where Olivier's grave is at St Stephen's Church. Went and got a photograph of the grave and the headstone. So. And as I say, Neville Scott's done a lovely piece in The Cricketer about him. So I think it's an important individual, a very, very important individual, because he didn't really bring about a flood of West Indian cricketers to England thereafter, but they did eventually come. But he was, you could argue, he was kind of a trailblazer.
Well, definitely. And as you say, from that period of history, it is remarkable on its own. County cricket, if you listen to those in suits and blazers and club ties, county cricket is doomed. The future is franchise. It's fireworks and DJs and all the rest of it. I'd argue the opposite. I think when you go around, certainly at Essex, but, you know, certainly amongst the unfashionable counties, and with all due respect, I'd chuck Derbyshire in that loop as well.
Yeah.
But they're not. And I was talking recently to Annie Chave from County Cricket Matters about the whole community feeling, the community that county cricket clubs create and feed, if you like. It's not as bad as people would have us believe, is it, the county scene?
Not at all. I mean, spend a day at Scarborough during the four-day game, go to Cheltenham for the 50-over game, as I did earlier this season, the Yorkshire game up at Chesterfield, our 50-over fixtures at Derby in August when, you know, children were off school and the sun was out. You know, there is, of course, still a big interest in county cricket. For me, I think the fundamental issue for the game is that there is a whole host of money that comes into cricket, and provided cricket can sustain all these different strands, then why not? Because for me, the only way, let's just say there was a plan to get rid of county cricket, all that would happen is the money that currently goes from the ECB to the counties that play county cricket would go somewhere else, and in all probability it would just be into players' pockets. So I just believe passionately that while the entire game can be sustained, and whether that is Test cricket, ODIs, International T20, franchises, or anything else, provided there's enough put aside to allow county cricket to continue, and enough put aside so that recreational cricket can continue, then I say, why not? Why not? Because cricket is absolutely, and the first video I did actually on Twitter was about this, because someone had said something somewhere about county cricket disappearing, and my first video on Twitter was what Derbyshire means to me, and I described how Derbyshire meant to me. It was a family. It was part of my life as a boy when my parents divorced, and I looked for something else to sort of envelop me, and without understanding what was happening at the time, it was Derbyshire cricket that did it. And over the years, that tremendous fellowship just grew and grew and grew. But you look at Derbyshire today, and we're going to have 10,000 people in the ground in a month's time for a fireworks event, which will bring the community of Derbyshire together. There's a fun fair and everything else. Yes, it'd be great to get 10,000 there to watch a game of cricket, but it's providing something for other people. I get to the ground at 7 o'clock in the morning on a match day, and there are cleaners there cleaning the ground. These are people who are employed to do work within, you know, from the local community doing their work. It's a wedding venue, it's a conference venue, it's all sorts of different things, and it's not just about 20 cricketers. It's much, much more than that. And I think while the game can sustain it, then more power to its elbow.
We could talk all day, and I'm now utterly convinced, I kind of had this feeling before, that we're going to have to get you on in the future for regular updates. It tends to happen with a lot of the people I talk to, but it's been a fantastic pleasure, David. Great to meet you, and keep up this brilliant Twitter or X or whatever it's called this week. The content is fantastic. I would advise anyone that's listening or watching to this, just follow it. Look for David Griffin on Twitter. You'll find it pretty easy enough. If you're into cricket, you'll have probably seen someone retweet it, least of all me, and give it a follow. And it's not all heavyweight stuff. And just before I go, David, is that true about how you met your wife?
What did I say? Where did I say I'd met her the last time you watched?
Was it you got thrown out of somewhere, or she got thrown out?
Oh, no, no. No, most of them aren't true. Most of them aren't true. We had friends around for lunch yesterday, and we did actually explain how we met. This is the true story of how we met. Both of us had been bereaved by our previous partners, and neither of us were looking for romance. And I was watching cricket down at Northampton, and it was a one-day game on the Sunday, and I went down with a mate of mine, and we got absolutely blind drunk on the Saturday night and stayed in this hotel before the game on the Sunday. My wife, my now wife, was at a salsa dancing convention. This is true. I know it sounds like it's one of our jokes, but she was at a salsa dancing convention. And she came out of this room and she got this dress on, all spangly, and she looked a bit shiny, I remember saying to her. And so I started talking to her, and she, bear in mind, she was bereaved and I was bereaved. She was like, I don't want this. And then I said to her, I said, which one of this lot's your husband then? And she says, I haven't got a husband, he's dead. Which normally is a bit of a showstopper. You know, it kind of, well, that's it. And I sort of stood there and went, yes, this is absolutely true. Yes. And I shouted to my mate and I said, "Is what? Her husband's dead." And of course, in my drunken stupidity, what I was trying to get across was the fact that it was somebody I could sit and have a chat with, and we could perhaps understand each other's losses. And we did till about 4 o'clock in the morning. And she wandered off, and I wandered off, and I did slip a phone number on a piece of paper and gave her the piece. I said, "Ever you're interested." And I remember watching her walk off to her room and thinking, "What of all the times to meet somebody like that? Well, I wish I'd met her years ago or whatever." And from there, it developed through a friendship over the phone, because we live 30 miles, 40 miles apart, and then eventually to marriage. So, yeah, we know, but that is the true way in which we met. I think what I'd said last time, she'd got thrown out somewhere for fighting at a Blarney convention. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, she liked that. She quite liked that. But that's not true. What I've just told you is definitely the truth.
You're giving your age away. The days of thinking you've met someone, you pulled because you've given them your phone number, that doesn't exist these days, does it? They have to swap social media and God knows
it's
whatever.
Very odd. I wouldn't know where to start, Frank.
No, me neither. David, been an absolute pleasure. Really talking to you.
Nice to meet you.
We'll have to get you back again. There's always something to talk about, and I think you're the man to shed common sense and a bit of levity on the whole thing as well. So, many, many thanks, and we'll catch up soon.
Thanks, Darren. Cheers, mate.
What an excellent, excellent chat, David Griffin. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at DGriffinPix. And also thanks to my other guest, Jamie Porter. Very, very good value, and great to get his views on Essex, England, the fans, and also snooker. Keep it locked to Phoenix. The man, the legend, John Chubb, is up next with the non-league show. And then the smoothest voice on the radio, Gareth Williams, is here at 8 till 9 with Bumper to Bumper. Playing us out tonight, it's Mr. Bruce Springsteen, as requested by David Griffin. I'll stop talking and you can listen to The Price You Pay. You learn to sleep at night with the price you pay. Running on through the night, honey.
with that pretty little baby in your hands. Do you remember the story of the promised land? How we crossed the desert sand and could not enter the chosen land. On the banks of the river, he stayed to face the price he paid. So let the game start.
On the hour across Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.